And back in Washington, the 40 Republican members of the Senate pledged their faith and trust in President Truman and Secretary of State Stettinius. He called in the representatives of the big nations to tell them that the president's decision, President Truman's decision to hold the San Francisco conference as scheduled on April 25th, was an official fact. There is news from the war fronts today that brings closer than ever the triumph that will be dedicated to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Officially, Vienna has fallen to the Russians, and American armies are racing the last miles to those German citadels, Berlin and Leipzig. Thousands of American fighting men who feel deeply the loss of their president are blasting any Nazi myth, any forlorn outside Nazi hope that the Yanks aren't going to finish the job. They're an overwhelmingly victorious army, and they believe that Franklin D. Roosevelt, more than any other man, made them so. And now today, although mourning the president, they're pressing home the knockout. And here are the latest reports. The American Ninth Army is no more than 45 miles from Berlin at this hour, and there are unconfirmed but persistent reports that lightning-fast Ninth Army spearheads may now be only 15 miles from Berlin. And the American First Army is cut loose with a burst of speed that almost completes the cutting in two of the Reich by bringing Leipzig under direct siege. Latest word is that the First Army is within 4 miles of Leipzig and going a mile an hour, almost unchallenged. And to the south, and not more than just a few miles behind, is one of Patton's Third Army tank armadas, last said to be the only 11 miles now from the same place, from Leipzig, and 16 miles from Beirut. And so it may be that the armies, the Americans, will be first to enter both Berlin and Leipzig, places menaced for weeks by the Red Army. More than that, reports of a mounting battle east of Berlin come back to Moscow, indicating that the Soviets may have launched their side of the payoff offensive. Meantime, Joseph Stalin finally has set off the victory guns in Moscow for the capture of Vienna. He makes the announcement in an order of the day. Vienna is captured, and with it, 130,000 enemy prisoners. 11 German tank divisions have been put to rout by the 3rd Ukrainian Army, and now the second greatest city of Hitler's Reich is a part of the Reich no more. Vienna is cruelly scarred but free, and the battlefront surges well to the north and the west, north toward Prague, and west toward the Hitler's last refuge in the Alps. And so, 324 guns in Moscow boom out the news from Vienna. The rest of that picture back inside Germany, at a conservative measure, the American and Russian armies are within 90 miles of each other right now. Some American 9th Army tanks have covered 60 miles just today in a sweep down the home stretch toward Berlin, leaving well behind a hurdle that failed to serve the Germans, the Elbe River. We're well past that line now. Official news blackouts obscure the extent of that sweep. American pilots say that long columns of German trucks and troops are streaming up toward Berlin from the outflank base of Halle, southwest of the capital. But the question now is whether the Nazis actually can marshal a serious stand at Berlin itself, whether it may be outflanked as the Germans speed on to link forces with the Russians. The 6th Armored Division troops of Patton's army believe they have captured one of the leading German designers of those B-weapons, a man named Gaulnau. And there's a Paris report that American troops have opened the gates of the notorious Buchenwald concentration camp for 21,000 political prisoners of the Hitler regime. There are more victories in the rear areas. Duisburg, the great inland port in the Ruhr, has been taken by the American 9th. Still incomplete, today's count of prisoners already is 30,000, today alone. The British 2nd Army is poised for a renewed advance toward Hamburg in the north, while Allied bombers concentrate on that area. Canadians have fought into the historic Dutch town of Arnhem, and a Polish force is within 15 miles of the North Sea port of Emden. And down in the south, the American 7th Army is within 60 miles of the old Czech frontier. And over in western Italy, three columns of the 5th Army are closing in on La Spezia naval base, with the 8th Army expanding its new gains on the other side of the peninsula. A sweep of victories in Europe today, and they seem like a tribute to the rightness of Franklin Roosevelt and his cause of world freedom, his crusade for a way to a lasting world peace. The thoughts of fighting men in the Pacific follow the funeral train that moves to Washington from Georgia today. But in the Pacific, too, the war goes on. Significant blows at the Navy who perpetrated Pearl Harbor, at the enemy there, and the act that Franklin Roosevelt declared would live in infamy. In the grim battle for southern Okinawa, American troops on the right flank have broken the strongest counterattack yet launched by the Japs on that island. It was almost complete suicide to the last Jap for the enemy force that came charging out. But late reports on the Okinawa battle have dealt almost entirely with Japanese counterblows, suicidal forays on the ground and in the air. On the other hand, Tokyo has just undergone another raid by B-29s, the second strike at Tokyo within 24 hours. And from an April 7th raid on Nagoya, they have photographs back today at Guam that would have made a heartening report to President Roosevelt. Evidence that Nagoya's great Mitsubishi Aircraft Engine Works is practically destroyed today. American submarines, often singled out for special praise by the late commander-in-chief, well, they've turned in another accounting. 15 more enemy ships sent down in far eastern waters by our silent under-the-ocean fleet. And now, since Pearl Harbor, American subs have bagged nearly 1,100 enemy warships and supply boats. News from the Philippines tells of a quick decision over the Japs on Bohol Island, invaded Wednesday. Now, every major island in the Philippines has been re-entered by the Yanks. And that might have been cause for celebration in the islands, except for the death of the president, whose last statement for publication was a good word for the island commonwealth. He promised them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Mr. Niles Trammell, president of the National Broadcasting Company. Mr. Trammell.
Yesterday, a giant wave of shock and sorrow swept the world as it learned of the passing of a truly great man, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Upon every American, the impact of our common loss has fallen in some deep and personal way. We would all express our sense of shock, of separation, somewhat differently. But to us who work in the broadcasting industry, the death of the president means the loss of one of its warmest friends. He, more than any other man, tested and proved the tremendous potential of radio as a force in a working democracy. In a nation of great radio audiences, his was the voice that always commanded the greatest number of listeners. His was the understanding, the deep and sympathetic understanding, which helped our industry to grow and develop in a truly American way. In these days of sorrow, when each of us in his way has a duty to perform, the National Broadcasting Company is very conscious of its responsibility to the American people. True, a great radio network emerges as a sounding board for the solemn mood of a people. But it's more than that. When Lincoln's funeral train wound its mournful way westward to Illinois, each station stop was a separate episode, a stab out of context, so to speak, in the tragedy of a people. Today, through broadcasting, we can merge our sorrow and our prayers, all 140 million of us, and through that sharing, seek a common comfort. To this end, as you are no doubt already aware, the National Broadcasting Company has rearranged its program schedule. Last night, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, many of your favorite programs were not and will not be heard at all. Others will alter their character. All programs, whether commercial or non-commercial, will reflect in one way or another the deep solemnity of the hours through which we are passing. In special programs from many countries throughout the world, in music, in prayer, and in drama, in all the rich resources of the spirit, the National Broadcasting Company will seek to find and to share with you, its listeners, the solace which we need. It is very heartening, in such a grave period, to work here in Radio City, at the center of a world communications network, and to experience the eager willingness with which people from all walks of life cooperate in the proper handling of an unprecedented event. I would be remiss indeed if I did not mention the unselfish understanding, the swift willingness of our affiliated stations to cooperate, and the similar readiness of our commercial clients, our advertisers, to join in our proper coverage of these grave events. Some by relinquishing their time, and all by voluntarily eliminating their customary commercial messages. I feel a real pleasure, a real measure of personal gratitude at being a part of an industry all elements of which have recognized so instantly the part they should play and must play in such a tragic time. This is a trial we face together, all of us. And who can phrase the words that will lessen the grief of a nation? Who can speak the message that will erase the shock and sorrow of 140 million people? Nevertheless, it may not be beyond our province to recall one of the basic beliefs of our great commander-in-chief. The belief that common trials unite democratic peoples, remind them of their goals, reaffirm their destinies. Those are the terms I firmly believe upon which that great voice, if it could again speak into this microphone tonight, would urge us to seek new faith from his passing. Our beloved president is dead, but our country still lives, and the ideals for which he and that country have always stood, they too still live. A war remains to be won. Nothing he did toward the winning of that war is lost. Nothing he did can be lost unless we falter. It would be his wish that instead we press on with even firmer determination to the certain, inevitable victory. It would be his command that we unite with all our courage and fortitude behind our new president. As President Truman so quickly and efficiently has undertaken his new duties, so we the people pledge ourselves to follow his leadership in the winning of the war and the determination of the peaceful world envisioned by our departed commander-in-chief.
Thank you, Mr. Trammell.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Dr. Frank Black and the NBC Choir and Orchestra with Nan Merriman as soloist.